the first time ever, Barrett and I got to listen live to our theme song as we were starting our show.
That was really truly something.
It was riveting.
And that was, like, I hope that, you know, I would like to get video involved in some way so that people can see me dancing to that as well.
I've got news for your ass, Barrett.
Because that would just really, I think, bring everything full circle. I mean, I was popping, I was locking.
Barrett went from no headphones.
I was disco dancing.
To headphones on, nearly stripping. He was dancing so hard. And the good news is that we are actually actively testing video shit so that we can implement that as part of our show.
Oh, testing. One, two. That's okay.
Yeah, like, exactly like that.
Good.
As early as like in the next couple weeks even possible.
Wow.
As early as like very fucking soon. So,
man,
we could maybe be watching you dance in the near future.
Yeah.
Which is exciting stuff. Welcome to Oysters, Clams, and Cock. Oh, by the way, to explain, usually the theme song is inserted after the fact. So we don't actually get to hear it during the intro.
That's a little podcast magic for you.
Yeah, it's the first time we're using a Rodecaster here at Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas now, and I get to press a little button, and it plays the song. I feel like Kanye.
Yeah, Yeah. The Rodecaster has, some buttons on it. Some Kanye buttons on it.
Light up colorful buttons.
Some mixer buttons.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. There are two of them I'm comfortable pressing. All the other ones we're going to leave alone today because I'm not sure what they do. Welcome to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I am Ross Boland here with my buddy Barrett Dudley to bring you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs. Barrett, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm just over here and it's the J to the B D. No, but seriously, I've just been living large,
like chomping at the bit to
like
discuss.
Like a real OG, and waiting for somebody to rap about me. You know,
well,
at a college in my faraway hometown of Houston.
In Houston.
Well, yeah, because I would have to go back to my childhood home
of
to
course.
Get an honorary wing named after me,
right.
Like the University of Houston,
right.
Go Cougs.
And you don't have children, so you needed to be a stranger who's just willing to go there for you.
Yeah, uh-huh.
To stand that hard for you.
Yes.
Just like Kendall stands.
Well, possibly a new love. No. That's Raya that puts on the party, and then his son raps for him. You're right. I'm going to need a son for this, Ross.
Yeah, you're going to need
Or a daughter.
That's fair. Rapping daughter.
Yeah.
She's going to need to go down a very dark path.
Maybe.
To get there.
Right.
But then eventually she comes out L to the OG.
Yeah, yeah. But looking forward to talking about that in more depth and detail as we do here on OCC.
Linda. Maybe you'll name her Linda. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
But we've got another fun one today. We're going to talk about a Succession. We're going to relive episode 8, right? And the all of the very magic. I've been chomping at the bit the whole 48 hours since I watched the episode, I guess, to discuss it.
Ross, when you saw that the title of that episode was called Dundee, were you then disappointed that there were no crocodiles or Australians or knives in this episode?
Or like Michael Scott award shows.
Also that. That was my initial thought. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
We're giving out some Dundies.
The Dundies. Okay, good. But no, it turns out that's the name of like the place he's from in Scotland.
In Scotland.
Which, I don't even know. Is he not fond of it? Or is he just not fond of anything?
Well, he's not fond of anything, but I think he's especially acerbic towards his childhood home.
Yeah. What a word.
Yeah.
My God. We haven't even gotten in an ad read yet. And that was a, what do they call it? Like a $20 word or something?
Uh-huh,
an SAT word? My God. This episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa. I think Lisa is our longest running sponsor, if I'm not mistaken. And they make the most comfortable life and world-changing mattresses in existence. I would argue your mattress is up there with your TV in terms of important purchases you make for your home. So you have to ask yourself, is my mattress kind of shitty? Do I even remember where it came from? Do I wake up every morning feeling like I've won the lottery because my mattress is so damn comfortable? If you don't, I do on my hybrid by Lisa, and it's time to join me. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you, and to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All Lisa products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you actually want to spend time in. Their most advanced luxury hybrid mattress, the one that I have, it's also the one that Barrett has. It's made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support. Best, most comfortable bed I've ever laid eyes or body on. Lisa, great company. They also donate one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits because they want to make their they want to make sure we, as their customers, know we have made the right choice, right, by going with Lisa. So, Lisa mattresses are also made in the USA, and home delivery and setup is available. Financing is available. Do not miss out, Clam Fam. Live healthier, live happier, rest deeper. Order today, get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at leesa.com/dragon. Use the promo code dragon. That's leesa.com/dragon. Promo code dragon. Barrett, what do we have going on Patreon, our place for premium ad-free OCC? If you've ever thought to yourself, my God, I need more OCC, there is, in fact, a place to get it.
Most people claim to have thought that to themselves.
At least once in their life.
At least once. And so now there is a place where you can go to fulfill that instinctual desire that is probably occurring in your brain right now.
Everybody wants to go where everybody knows their name. And this is our cheers.
This is our cheers.
Patreon.com/oysters clams cockle.
It is.
In October, we have an incredibly exciting amount of content coming your way.
That's right. This is October's very own content schedule.
Indeed. We're going to Drake. Tell you about it now.
Okay, so there's 5 weeks in October. It's a long one.
We get
extra spooky this October because there's 5 weeks.
Real freaky naughty.
No additional podcast this week, but then next week we will be talking about Joker.
Yes.
Starring
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, this was a no-brainer.
Yeah,
for me it was.
Yeah, no, it has the same mix that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood had.
Controversy amidst
great reviews
and Academy Award hype. Yeah.
So it's
an all-star cast.
Right. So it's got it's got all these various things that we can.
Those are all good things to me.
You know, we can like spin out of it and talk about it and discuss.
There will be a lot to discuss.
And really dive into.
That I'm confident in.
So then the week after that, we will wrap up The Righteous Gemstones.
Indeed.
The first season will have ended that Sunday, and then that week we will cover basically the back half. I think we covered about 3 episodes first pod. So we'll just talk about the season as a whole and anything real
detailed in the back half.
Yeah, real kind of crazy that we thought, you know. I mean both you and I have now. It's a shame that we didn't get to 4 in our first Patreon pod.
A little bit, yeah.
Because of the Lucifer opening sequence, which is just like magnificent. And really, I feel like it really starts to like dial in there where you're just like, oh, this is gonna be a wild ride. This is gonna be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, this is gonna be good. That's what you said.
We're gonna have that dude on the show, by the way. I don't think I've teased that yet live on an episode. He's absolutely gonna be on the show.
The actor.
Tony Cavallaro will be on the show.
Wow.
We've been emailing back and forth.
You'd love to see it.
He's currently in Prague filming a project, which sounds super cool.
Actors.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, man, I'd love to do the show. I'll do it right when I get back from Prague. This is me doing him through email.
Yeah, yeah.
When I get back from Prague, I'm leaving for a project tomorrow. And I was like, cool, I'll be here when you get back. And then like a week later, I was like, hey, man, how's Prague? I just saw one of your testicles. And he responded and was like hilarious about it.
Yeah,
it turns out that was his nut. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. We'll see. I mean, that's the question that you should lead off with. It's like, was that your nut?
I did. I led off with it through email.
I saw that dude's balls.
That was a real
ball. They were funny looking.
Yeah. They were weird looking.
They were weird looking.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so that'll be exciting. At some point, we'll get him on.
Yes. Awesome. The week after that, we're going to do hotline calls.
Tight. Just for members of the Mollusk
Just
Militia.
That episode will be Mollusk Militia only.
Our $10 tier, the Mollusk Militia.
And you will
Militia.
Be able to call about anything that we're watching in September or October. So you can call about Joker. You can call about Succession. Also on the regular pod, we'll be wrapping up The Boys Season 1.
Fleabag.
We will have covered the premiere of Watchmen at that point. We will have watched El Camino on Netflix. So there will be a real truckload of stuff.
That's a plethora.
To call in about.
A plethora.
And then in our last week of Patreon, this will be available to Crustacean Nation as well as Mollusk Militia. We will be covering Fleabag Season 2 in its entirety. And if there are any Mollusk Militia calls about Fleabag,
okay.
Start off your voicemail by saying, Fleabag.
All right. So you want us to hold those?
We'll hold those.
Nice.
Because we're not going to talk about Fleabag until the last week
like
of the
that.
Month.
I like that. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. No Fleabag till the
But
end.
We'll pepper in. This is something that's never been done before. We'll pepper in some calls on,
I love
on
that.
That Fleabag.
I love that. Let me ask you, which one of these things are you most excited for? Because I'm currently having a little bit of trouble deciding. Fleabag and the Joker, I think, are... Well, I'm already deep into Righteous Gemstones. I feel like that feels current in my life. I haven't seen these other things, so I'm more excited for
right,
them.
Right.
The Joker and Fleabag season 2 are kind of neck and neck. But
yeah.
I, honest to God, after watching the trailer probably 100 times, a Joker is my number one thing I'm hyped for in October.
Yeah, and
it fits with spooky season.
Yes, yes, it totally does. Now, and I mean, I am. Don't get me wrong. I am totally. As long as we leave the theater with our cabezas.
Oh, yeah.
Then, you know, I'm super stoked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Which I hope happens, Barry, because it'd be a goddamn shame if we didn't.
Yeah. But honestly, I mean, everything on this list, October's very own content schedule right in front of me, I'm very stoked about. I mean, there's been so much buzz about Fleabag season 2. I'm very ready to jump in on that. That's
okay.
That's very high up.
I know. I'm trying to, like, sort of limit myself with how psyched, like, pumped I am.
Yeah. You want to, like, temper expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
A
little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shit. Great. If you want any of what we just talked about, if you want all of what we just talked about, you know where to find it, patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. So stoked for the Joker, the Righteous Gemstones, Fleabag season 2, the Hotline Call extravaganza for the Mollusk Militia, and all that good stuff.
Oh, so much good stuff.
You ready for Succession season 2, episode 8?
Yes.
Is it time for another Oystar Clamco board meeting, Barrett?
Yes, yes. Gather up all of the shareholders. Now, you're only a voting shareholder, by the way, if you subscribe to our Patreon. You have no voting rights.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
You can be an Oystar Clamco shareholder
right.
and listen to this podcast.
You're like a stock option holder
but
if you listen to the show, but you don't subscribe
on Patreon.
But if
you want voting rights, you do have to, you got to, I mean, that's how this works.
That is how it works.
Here at Oystar Clamco.
I got a little surprise for you.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Bang, bang.
I press a button and it happens. It's magic. They've set us up.
Technology.
It's a magic box, and I press it, and dope noises come out.
This is fun.
Isn't it fun? This is so professional. My God. And Barrett, the craziest thing is about to happen. I have another button to press because you might not need a son. We have someone who called in.
Okay.
Our very own DJ Crime Dog. With a rap song for us today to start off our Succession talk.
This is magnificent.
This is the most media-packed episode we've ever done.
If you're not a longtime OCC listener, DJ Crime Dog has, on the occasion, called in with a show-specific rap.
A show-themed
typically
rap.
I think they've been Game of Thrones mostly, but he's maybe even done like a Westworld one or something.
He did a few for FAMP for Westworld.
Yeah, yeah.
He did a bunch for us when we were covering Game of Thrones back in the day. If you're an OG, like back in the day,
yeah,
Oysters, Clams, and Cockles
yes.
listener, you're familiar with this guy.
Yeah.
He's a veteran hotline caller,
yes.
is what I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And he took some time to write a little song for us, specifically for you.
After I saw Kendall's rap, I had to holler at DJ Crime Dog on Twitter and say, we need this.
We need you, DJ Crime Dog.
Yeah,
and the beauty
yeah.
of it is, the man executed the call like 30, 45 minutes before we recorded. Like perfect timing. He texts me, he's like, I've got something coming your way. And I was like, all right, Crime Dog. And literally 2 minutes later, I get a voicemail notification. So I'm going to play it for you now. Here's DJ Crime Dog.
Hey, what's good? It's your boy DJ Crime Dog in the place to be. Let me hear you if you're down with the O to the CC. They be the OCC. Folks, we eating. The shellfish hitting. Clam fam. Now these oysters dripping. Think I won't slam a clam. What the hell are you sipping? Started out Game of Thrones with a raven vision. Opened up their third eye. Now they on a mission to cover the TV. On O to the CC. Thing is pimping to be my Mollusk Militia. O to the CC. Boss Roland Barrett Dudley. Premium TV. HBO shows. And Stars and Showtime. Two buddies you should cop, call it Lethal Weapon. Got a couple billion bands up in quick succession. Every Wednesday in the feed, better keep refreshing the O to the CC. Oysters, clams, and cockles to the newbies. Boss Roland and Barrett Dudley. It's a joke from Season 5, Episode 9 of Game of Thrones. I bet. I was going to make a joke about bust down the boar on the floor, but it felt mean. So anyway, big love. Crime Dog out.
Okay, so that was DJ Crime Dog and his version of L to the OG.
Yeah.
For us here.
He went,
on OCC.
And by the way, he even had the stones to go a cappella.
He did.
Yeah.
He
so
did.
Just so imagine that on top of the beat.
What was his
then
boy
we,
who
then
cooked
we
up
would
the beat?
Be banging. DJ Squiggles. I
DJ
think.
Squiggles cooked up that beat for Kendall, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a hot beat DJ Squiggles brought to the fucking party.
So this is a little tidbit that I learned after the fact that I did not know.
Okay.
Rupert Murdoch is like one of the guys that Logan Roy is based off of.
Right.
He's the owner and creator of Fox News.
He's one of like four media moguls yeah. at the top tippity top.
So Rupert Murdoch also has, you know, multiple kids, one of whom named James Murdoch was like influential because of his capital in like the mid 90s New York hip hop scene. And seeded some of the record labels that put on guys like Mos Def and Talib Kweli.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Like,
so that's sort of...
That was one of his like pet projects that he did with all of his, you know,
billions,
massive stacks
millions.
Of cash.
Yeah.
Is like he really was into
rap.
The hip-hop scene in the community and like basically went and was the backer for some of those kind of early backpack rap labels.
I wonder if there's any inspiration there drawn there for Kendall, or if Kendall's just supposed to be like,
so
obviously so many white people love rap music in 2019.
I think that there has to be like
at least
a draw there, because there was also the scene in season one early. Shit, it might have been the pilot where he's like in the back of the limo
rapping
along to
yeah,
Beastie
there's
Boys.
There's multiple moments so far that we've been
and
given
then,
that show us he loves rap music.
Yeah, and then him and Stewie go to that rap show and he's like trying to be cool backstage with the rappers.
Yes.
So he is definitely, he fits the profile of like
dude,
this rich white kid that really wants to be like involved
rap.
In the hip hop scene.
Yeah, he idolizes yeah. the rap game.
So just, I had no idea that was even like a parallel. But they, I mean, they really just, they knocked that out of the park. My favorite, I was sitting on the couch, like, just like, you know, holding myself because of how awkward it was.
Right.
But then I thought in the inside of the episode, Jesse Armstrong, the showrunner, said it best. He was basically like, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was like, it's incredibly awkward. And also, it's kind of good.
It is good.
And it is good.
Like,
it's just really awkward to watch Kendall do it.
Dude, his performance... It's perfect because it lets you know he's obsessed enough and has listened to enough rap to pull off this little song, right?
Yeah.
Like, whether or not he wrote it himself is kind of neither here nor there. I don't know. I assume he did write it himself based on the absurdity of the lyrics, which we will read shortly. But it's a good performance.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
He
sounds pretty good. He raps pretty good. His flow's okay. Like,
this actor,
you know.
Again, I just have to say, it's... Next level shit.
Yep.
The lyrics start out, check it. Born on the North Bank, king of the East Side, 50 years strong, now he's rolling in a sick ride. Handmade suits, raking in loot, five-star general, y'all best salute. Bitches be catty, but the king's my daddy. That's a very, very bad line. Rock all the haters while he go roll a ratty, like Maserati. Squiggle on the decks. Squiggle on the decks, candy on the rise, and then randomly the chorus kicks in, L to the OG, dude be the OG, A, and he playing like a pro. He even works like the awkwardness, like you know how an awkward rap chorus on occasion, if you work it, if you make it hit right,
mm-hmm.
that can make it stand out and make a hit record.
Sure.
And he works that a little bit, like the first time he does the chorus, you're like, you're cringing a little,
yeah.
But by the second time, you're like, okay, this is sort of a ballsy chorus, like
yes.
the way he pulls this off.
Yeah.
The part especially where he's like, A, and he be playing, it always just comes off a little funny. Playing like a pro, A1 ratings, 80K wine, never gonna stop, baby, fuck father time. Bro, don't get it twisted, I've been through hell, but since I stand dad, I'm alive and well. Which is almost like blatantly just copping to being a total
yes,
fucking loser.
Being a suck up, yeah.
Yes. So don't try to run your mouth at the king, just shut up, bitch, and kiss the ring. This is a room full of billionaires and shit. L to the OG, dude be the OG, and he playing like a pro. When I say L, you say OG. L to the OG. L to the O. L to the motherfucking OG. And then he puts the hat on his dad.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Like sort of cherry. The whole episode was good. I enjoyed the whole episode. So I thought there were a lot of really good moments. We're gonna hit all of them. All my favorites anyway. But and we'll see if we have time for yours. But but the fucking rap song, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, I had seen like some mentions of Kendall's rap on Twitter before I got to watch the episode, and
dude, so had I, but I completely forgot.
And then I by the time we got to it, I had forgotten that I was like waiting for it, and so when they spring it on you there at the end of the episode, it really is just like,
it's
I don't know,
very out of nowhere.
It's out of nowhere. Yeah, exactly, and you know, I thought that this episode was good. I didn't think it was the best. That happens on a 10-episode run here on the second season.
Can't
like
all
they
be
all fit. They all right exactly. They can't all be A++s. You know, there were just a few like quirky parts that maybe didn't make total sense. Like a few things felt like just slightly forced, which was
hit me with them.
Which was like okay. So. This felt like a weird thing for Logan to agree to, the whole thing, like going over back to Dundee on the behest of Rhea to get this stupid plaque at like some school in his hometown.
Right.
Like it was a lot.
I thought they painted it up well enough, though, because they even addressed that almost, like, this is an insane trip, and he's like, yeah, but it's important to Rhea, she's very good at this, she knows how optics work, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
She thinks it'll help with the, what's the battle they're called, what's the, not custody battle.
The proxy battle.
The proxy battle, thank you, that they're involved in. But I also think, I'll explain partially, it's Logan slipping. Right? Like we see several times in this episode, it's sad, but it's like what you get with your grandparents when they're really, really old. You have moments where you're like, are you fucking senile right now or just deep in thought?
Right.
And
right.
He does that a lot where it's like he says a lot of sentences that don't say anything. Tell us a story, Dad, about fucking Dundee. And he's like, well, yeah.
Yeah. He says something
and he's
about
like cool story, Dad.
It was a dollar bill. And it's whatever it took to get me out of here.
That was fucking dope. Did you get that?
No.
Rosebud is from what is widely considered to be one of the greatest movies of all time that is currently slipping my mind. And as I type it into Google so that it will save my ass, Citizen Kane.
Okay.
Which sits at the like top of AMC's 100 greatest films list.
Yeah, largely Rosebud considered one of the best movies ever.
Spoiler alert, last line in the movie, he's like, Rosebud or some shit. And nobody's ever been able, like, it's like, what the fuck did that mean? And a lot of people take it to be the thing that drove him forever. I think it was a wagon or some shit. I've never seen the movie, for the record. This is all me speaking off of secondhand knowledge.
Okay.
But it's something around the gist of that. His Rosebud, Logan is saying, was a dollar bill. Whatever it took to get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
So when he's asking, tell us a story, Dad, he says, his response is, I never gave a fuck about this place. I did whatever I could to get out. But he doesn't say it like that. He says it in old, confusing man jargon.
Yes,
and you're like,
it was very confusing. It was very confusing.
But him, throughout the episode, those especially the moment with Shiv sits down with him and says, like, let's call a truce for the night. Like, he's not okay. He's not all there. And we've known that. Like, since the stroke last season, he's had these moments of weakness or seemingly weakness where he maybe isn't all there, but then he gets on stage and gives a little speech, and it's like, well,
yeah,
so he can still handle some stuff.
And I definitely think that they are pushing a little bit of that, like, is he 100% there? Is
mentally
he
clear?
Right. Is he mentally, or is he kind of foggy right now? Because he definitely, you're right,
seems
this episode
foggy.
Definitely has some moments.
And like he could be manipulated.
Yeah. But then at the same time, is he just a leg up on this whole cruise thing? Like, does he feel the people like breathing down the back of his neck right now? And he's like, this is a moment where I need to kind of,
Yeah, it's the Tony Soprano.
Step to the side.
It's the Tony Soprano. Let somebody else take the reins because then they become the target. What he does with Uncle Junior in The Sopranos, and it works to perfection. And we've seen the kids most certainly are playing that angle, right? They want Rhea now because, and they're cool with Rhea, and Shiv signs off on Rhea,
yep,
because they want her to take the bullet that they know is coming,
right?
Now I hadn't considered whether or not Logan might be more privy to that than we think, and sort of thinking ahead, getting this like sort of mental illness, possible senile old man angle out mm-hmm. there. And this new CEO, it's like double coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he'll be fine. Then maybe they say, it was a mistake. We should have never let it out of the family, when it really has nothing to do with her at all.
Right.
And but you know how that whole PR shit all works. People are stupid. And we buy all that. And then you rein it back in. I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see what happens with Logan.
Yeah, yeah.
But seemingly enjoyed zero of this episode. It ends with him seemingly on a whim, very quick decision, naming Rhea the future CEO, pending an announcement, a formal announcement or whatever. It was a strange one for him. For Rhea, it was a strange one too. This whole thing went horribly. I mean, it was a total shit show. And from the get-go, she went from the lady who had like built herself for 7 episodes to this place to be potentially named CEO to floundering. You could tell she was not comfortable with the way any of this was going.
Yeah, and that makes some sense, too, because she was absolutely playing on, you know, this was an away game for her.
Yes, yes.
Like, this was, I felt like, her first
away game,
her first real foray into, like, the full-on experience.
She had nothing to lose before.
She kind of did it in their first trip over to the UK.
Yeah.
Right? She got her toes, you know, she put her toes in the water.
Right.
But this was, like, putting together an entire thing in Scotland, like, really trying to, like, make some stuff happen.
Yeah.
So this was a large undertaking for her.
Yeah.
And she now has the target on her back from Shiv.
And then from everyone, almost just for fun.
Right.
Like,
yes.
Kendall even admits, like,
they're
really, like, it's just like, out
yeah,
of
they're hazing her, basically.
Loyalty to my sister and brother or whatever. Yeah. My dad's plan was better. But yeah, the whole thing goes horribly for Rhea, and by the end, she's named CEO of Royster Waco. Anyway, it's just fucking. She gets Marsha asks her to get tested for STDs.
That happens.
She gets roasted in a frying pan, and still comes out CEO, which obviously is not actually a good thing. She believes it to be a good thing. It's just more roasting. She went from, "Hey, I've made good moves into a new company," to the Roy family is literally going to eat me alive.
Yeah, Marsha's little line there was interesting. I liked it because it didn't. It was very.
The one about souls and
yeah, the one,
way she ended it.
The one to Rhea, where she's like, it doesn't make perfect. It doesn't make perfect like English grammatical sense.
The translation.
But she's like, I fought, and I have won, and I have fought, and I have lost.
Yeah.
But usually, when I lose, the other one loses an eye or so,
or a soul.
Oh, or soul?
Or she's like, I take something or a soul.
Oh, I thought she just said an eye or so.
No, it was like a terrifying
like an eye or something around no, that.
Or soul.
Or soul.
Is the caption
an
that
eye
I read.
Or
yeah.
soul. Okay.
Yeah, the
yeah.
subtitle.
See, this is what I get for not watching this episode with subtitles.
A lot of the time if I'm in bed and the TV's far away and I'm old and I'm 32 now, my ears might be fading.
Yeah.
I don't know, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Then I'll turn the subtitles on.
Yeah, this was a
I'll
this
cheat
was
it.
This was especially a smart one, probably, to have the subtitles on.
So yeah,
there were a lot of stuff going on.
She leveled
episode.
A pretty drastic threat there, and okay. it was a great moment for Marsha, and you can tell Rhea's even. She's already shaken, right?
Mm-hmm,
there's everything
mm-hmm.
in this, like you said, away game. Nothing is going her way. Kendall tells her to toast to fucking Rose, which we don't know what happened with Rose yet, right?
Yeah, Helen, mom, Rose, sister,
right.
Something tragic went down, right?
Now, we've been teased on this multiple times.
Yes.
And later in the episode, we're teased on it again when, what's his name? Uncle No Fun or whatever the fuck. I'm sorry, Grandpa Grumps.
Grandpa Grumps.
Uncle Fun or Grandpa Grumps. Grandpa Grumps brings it up and says, like, you always blamed yourself
mm-hmm.
for what happened to her. That wasn't your fault. But this actually is.
Yeah.
And just to speak to that, that old man, Grandpa Grumps, was the roast master of this episode. He compared Logan Roy to Hitler.
To Hitler, yeah.
He said that on the global scale of impact, he's worse.
There's a persuasive argument that
to be made that he's worse
than Hitler.
Than Hitler.
Yeah.
And Greg is like, I'm in a real situation here.
So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed Grandpa Grump's time on screen. He was just
he's incredible. He'll always be the Babe Pig in the City guy to me.
Uh-huh.
He always will be. He's an incredible actor. He's in all kinds of other movies. It doesn't matter, dude. I see him 40 years later, 20 years later, it won't matter. He's the Babe Pig in the City guy, and he's an incredible actor.
Yeah.
He made a movie with a talking pig good.
The first Babe
That's
is pretty good.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
Pig in the City, probably pretty good too.
Ram you. You're welcome.
But yeah, all of his, whether he was, even in the moment when he and Logan kind of like trade a brotherly story about the bird watching, I thought that was really good.
That was good.
All the scenes that he has with Greg where he's basically like, you need to resign now.
Yes.
Or you're out.
Or I'm cutting you out of the will.
Dude, talk about a Sophie's Choice.
Did you have any idea that Greg stood to inherit $250,000?
Okay.
$250 million.
I don't think that's all his.
Oh, he means that's what's in there to be
had. I think that means that's what's in there to be had amongst the people that he splits it up between.
Man, I don't know, man.
I don't know how many other people are on that will.
I'm taking it as that's what he meant as Greg's part was $250 million.
Okay, if that's the case, then why is this a decision for Greg then?
Why did Greg ever work at the fucking, what do you call it, theme park at all?
Well, I mean, it's not like he has access to this stuff right now. But now that he has like something other than working at a theme park on his resume, and his grandpa... If that was the gist of it, that it's $250 million...
Honestly, either fucking way, Barrett. Like, let's say there's 10 people in that pile that get access to the $250 million.
Yeah.
What are your odds of working your way up and surviving amongst the Roy family long enough to get several million out of
it? Yeah, probably...
You go with Grandpa Grumps every time.
You go with Grandpa Grumps here, absolutely.
So why do you think it is that he struggles with that decision? Because he seemingly struggles with that decision.
Yeah, he is struggling with that decision.
Is it the self-made aspect of it? Do you think Greg does have a little bit of like, maybe he's got some values?
I think Greg has the taste for the game.
Okay.
Now.
So that's a little bit of what I mean, too. Like,
he's enjoying it, he's moving
up himself.
He's really made moves. He really had a good time with that blackmail. You know what I mean?
That's what I mean, though. Yeah. The self-made angle. Like, I don't... You know what I mean? You either take grandpa's money,
right,
and then that's who you are.
Right.
Because it is. That sadly, if it's sort of how it's like generational wealth tends to define people.
Sure.
So you either take that or you do it yourself. You do your own thing. And he seems torn by that. And honestly, like a little bit of it is respect for Logan Roy for him, I think. Like the conversation they have in the bathroom is strange. And Logan almost comes out of his cloudy haze. Because Greg is important enough. He only comes out of the haze for very important conversations or moments, in my opinion. That's sort of the way I'm seeing his character right now.
Yeah. Now that was a really interesting moment because I couldn't quite tell whether or not that was like a genuine moment from Logan or if it was more just that he's not going to let his brother have anything.
Despite
like, this is just, yeah. I'm going to take, because guess what?
I think it's twofold, though.
Logan's, he's not really Uncle Fun. He's kind of a Grandpa Grumps, too.
He is, but keep in mind, I think this is one thing I did consider. Does Logan know in the back of his mind that this kid might know stuff? And that with everything that's unfolding right now, they don't need somebody else in the wind. That's one thing I considered, which sort of ties in with your, how there is he to make these strategic decisions? Because He goes from foggy old man washing his hands to looking him in the fucking eye, I like you, Greg, and going into the whole thing. And yes, it could also be just out of hate for his brother.
Now, here's another thing about the $250 million. At the end of this episode, we get Ewan, Grandpa Grumps, basically saying that he knows about the cruise ship and stuff.
Oh, outright.
And telling him that that's what's going to take him down. So
right.
Now we're, I think, led to believe that $250 million is what's backing the weasel.
It might be.
That seems like the cash cow that is...
Because one of the things
we allowing this like whistleblower, essentially...
To do his thing.
To not take $20 million.
$30 million. Yeah. What we get to in this episode is that, okay, there's the weasel is out there. Is it the same as the whistleblower, or is the weasel a different person? Is there two people or one?
I'm calling them the same thing.
Okay.
The weasel.
This person is refusing to take the hush money.
Yeah.
And because they believe it's likely he's backed by somebody that is a rival or wants to see the Roystar Waco company destroyed, the Roy family destroyed anyway.
Right, right.
At the end of the episode, we're led to believe one of those people could be Grandpa Grumps.
Yeah, yeah.
Babe Pig in the City, the farmer. because of the, but I think that's a red herring though, right? Would they really take us directly to the source, and would he really do that to his brother?
Well, yes. I think that the venom between them
is that bad.
Is that serious, which is
But it's odd that he shows up at all then. Is it just to poke
the
bear?
That's why their scenes are so interesting. And it's especially, like, I'm watching Logan in those ones where Ewan is just, like, dressing him down. You
Hammering.
Know, basically being like, you are
Hitler.
Fucking scum.
You've ruined the world,
and
basically.
And Logan kind of takes it. You know what I mean? Like, he
dried, sort of.
Like, I don't even think he manages to fuck off.
See, but does he register anything right now? I can't tell if that's his relationship with his brother or he's failing to register much of what goes on.
Yeah.
Because it's very, I'm telling you, if you go back and watch Logan, pay attention closely. It rarely seems like he knows what's happening. He snaps out of it for moments and that's it. Then recedes back into the clouds. And it might be strategic, Barrett.
Yeah.
It really might. How funny was it that Roman bought the wrong soccer team?
Very funny. Also, just a great... I love it when they just throw something in that's just basically like...
For fun.
This is what billionaires do.
Yeah.
He and his other billionaire friend...
They've known each other for a good 20 minutes.
Just bought a European soccer team. You know, it's nothing.
And the basically, the inference from the guy was, look, you need to do this with me or I'm not going to consider any of this bullshit about saving your father.
Yeah,
and
kind of. Yeah, it was...
We're going to buy this fucking
soccer
team
together. We're
going to
buy this soccer team together.
And that's going to show me that you're for real.
Yes.
And that had to have been a large financial decision for Roman. And it was actually the incorrect squad.
Yeah. Now,
and the way Logan leans into that, I'll give that as an example of a moment that he chose to snap out of the fog and fuck someone's face.
Now that seems, well, hopefully we learn more because now I'm invested. But there's no way that they could have signed the paperwork for all that yet. So hopefully they can retract that offer and make the same offer to the Hibs.
You think this was an entourage-y situation where in Entourage they would always present these massive financial conundrums and solve them with like a flick of the wrist at the beginning of the next episode?
They were in that bar like what, the day before the party?
And I'm not kidding. We've seen these guys hang out for less than 3 minutes on screen.
Right. So
it's strange that they're purchasing like a $250 million soccer
team.
Now,
if they already did it, then that just makes it even funnier that Logan now owns the Hearts instead
Roman,
of the Hibs.
Roman. And it's frankly, did he give it to his dad?
It was gray.
Okay.
Because the you know.
Or does everything Roman own is sort of de facto his dad?
Yes.
Still?
Yeah.
I get that feeling too, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like the Righteous Gemstones. He buys them all houses on the complex.
Right, on the compound. Yeah, exactly. And this felt like a thing where what's the purpose of this? This is in case they need this bailout from this guy, right?
Right.
So it's like, it's almost in the interest of the company, big picture here.
Yeah.
So I don't think that Logan went into the trust fund and pulled out, you know, half of it or whatever to buy the soccer team.
Right.
At least not just yet.
Right.
But great stuff there. Kendall was on one as well, throwing around money, just, you know, having the PJ come get his girl.
Yeah,
his flavor of the day.
If you didn't recall who this was, they gave it to us in the lead up to the episode, the previously on Succession. That's not what it's called anymore, but and nobody says that. But she was one of the call girls, right? Wasn't she a call girl at that party? He follows her up the stairs or something in the episode prior. I'm pretty sure.
Well, but you know what she is, right?
She's a stage actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you think she was a call girl before that?
I believe so. I believe he followed her up the stairs at a party prior. Or that was a different girl and it was just showing us that
maybe
Kendall's
they're just showing
ass.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Whatever happens, he flies her out there.
Yeah.
And he's obsessed with her, right? He won't shut up about how they're like rewriting the book on fucking and all this nonsense about lovemaking and how he just wants to spend the rest of it. I mean, he's in love with her for seemingly the entire episode.
This one's burning hot and fast.
Introducing her to his dad. she says the word awesome a bunch, which turns out to be her downfall, unfortunately. And then by the end, she's dead to him.
Yeah.
In a span of a minute, mm-hmm. he makes the decision to have her flown out, told that he is busy, has been tied up, and he's never going to see her again.
Can you not just picture George Costanza sitting in like Jerry's apartment being like, She said awesome too much.
Yeah. But here's the funny thing. His dad actually did judge her to be,
an airhead.
A balloon brain balloon mind.
Yeah, yes.
Mind like a balloon, he said to Shiv.
That was it. Like, he didn't get his dad's approval on it, and it went from 10 to 0.
So it immediately, the boner is gone.
Or 12 to 6.
Yeah, 12 to 6. I'm glad we got there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the new girlfriend, man, that didn't go well. That was a
but
bummer.
That was another thing that they didn't even, about this episode, that I kind of wished I had gotten from it. They didn't even bother to address Naomi. Like, we get it. Like, because Logan,
what's going on with Naomi
because
Pierce?
Logan dragged him to the dead kid's house instead of letting Kendall go on the date.
Right.
We're just, that, you know, she was pissed. He stood her up.
At the very least.
Like, it didn't happen, and now he's just out here fucking about and getting into whatever skirts he can.
He's ruining performances of plays, though, and it just happens to be the play that his brother Connor's girl that Connor is financially backing, which ipso facto Logan is financially backing, it turns out, because Connor's begging his dad for money this whole episode. This family is a disaster.
He's got two big irons in the fire.
What
right now, Ross? He's trying to run a presidential campaign and also fund
like a Broadway
play.
Shit.
And the other thing is that it's just there's something thriving in the sand right now.
Thriving in there, Barrett. They're fucking dude. The show is so good. Think about how many elements we've hit in the past 45 minutes.
Yeah, don't call Connor about that. You're just going to have to go straight to the sand guy.
Like everybody
just
else.
Just like everybody else.
Just like everybody else, dude. And remember, the sand thing is not just a mention from this episode. This was up last episode. She was like, I need real beach sand. This is construction sand. And he has to go buy more sand that's actual beach sand.
Yeah, beach sand.
Then, what do you say? It's like $4.60 a bag or something?
He's getting boned on it. That's
he
what
got
he
absolutely
is.
Boned on it. Yeah. Then there's something thriving in it. And then that thriving sand mite population is infecting the front row viewers who are calling in and complaining and trying to sue.
I don't know if there's like one individual that is writing for Greg, but like just the verbiage there,
it's so,
they're thriving. There's something thriving in the sand is so perfect.
I think you have to give equal parts credit in this case to the writers and the actor because
His delivery,
the way he's executing those lines is so goddamn golden, dude. Nobody else could do that. That's like one of those things where you hit a role. It is for you. You make it for you, your own thing.
I think there's something something living in the sand. I mean, they're thriving in the sand.
And then he's itching and shit the rest of the fucking episode. Oh, my God. Last thing I wanted to touch on, and then any more points you have, we'll get to. Kendall's outfit, the performance outfit, the outfit he chose for the performance.
His L to the OG, yeah.
Well, how'd you feel about
jersey.
How did you feel about the fit?
It was kind of
interesting.
Mitt Romney-ish, right?
Well, yeah, it was
like with the jersey over the biz cash.
I wanted a cooler gimmick from Kendall. That's the one thing. Like the rhymes were there, the bars were there.
Yeah,
the fit was Mitt Romney. It was
jersey over like the undersuit.
Yeah, it was.
You know,
he could have come with something cooler than
you
that.
Think. He should have gone further.
Yes,
get up.
I full blown rapper. Like he should have come out wearing
like some
Kanye
leather pants.
Outfit.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like something that a billionaire that respects rappers would do. A full-blown Yeezy Season 3 outfit.
I mean, I'd say it's probably 2-to-1 odds that Kendall in his apartment somewhere has like a grill from TV Johnny.
Oh, I'd be willing to
Ben Baller.
I'd be willing to bet my entire life
that he like puts in when he's just hanging out at home by himself.
We need to do an episode at some point that's just like an hour of character analysis of things we think Kendall would own or have done throughout his life. Because, yeah, dude, he's that guy. He would have absolutely bought a grill at some point. He had fucking rims on his car. You know he did.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he was deep in the early 2000s rap game.
Yeah.
And it shows. My God, it shows. Anything else from you on Succession?
What did you take from what was going on with Shiv asking Tom to flirt with Rhea? I didn't quite... What'd you take from that? I didn't quite get the motivation.
Okay, she was so desperate at that point to paint Rhea in a bad light to her father that she was willing to use Tom to get her to come off as a floozy to her dad.
Okay,
in not even considering how that would throw Tom under the bus too, which Tom brings up. He's like, "Are you pimping me out?" But dude, yes, this man, if he doesn't grow some balls in the last two episodes, I'm out on Tom.
Oh, it's just the VIP section right here, right? Right? Oh, we should get a little red velvet rope here. Oh,
fucking
cool
guy.
Kids. God, this, yeah, yeah.
He's the biggest Howdy Doody doofus.
I was just about to say.
Of them all.
Yeah. Big shouts to Howdy Doody doofus.
Yeah, you know
there.
Who you are.
Yeah.
But man, I'm out on Tom if he doesn't step up for himself, dude. This is ridiculous.
That,
he's getting played like a fiddle, and she's not even hiding it anymore. She's just telling him you don't matter.
That has to come to a head at some point.
It's
would imagine.
Pissing me off.
Yeah, because that doesn't seem sustainable. She's just really walking all over him.
Well, but then at one point he drops the line like, you know, maybe Rhea would actually be better for my thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, fuck you. But I love that he at least said something like, dude, come on, Tom, start making moves. This woman is destroying you.
And then speaking of relationships, you know, just should note that Roman kind of sort of threw a marriage proposal at Jerry, which I couldn't quite tell if that was like, let's seal the deal on our alliance or
actual marriage,
or if he was just like, I would marry you.
I'm serious. I think it was the latter. I mean, I think part of the importance of that is the strategic alliance as well. That matters to him.
Yeah.
But I think he really does have a very strange motherly thing with Jerry almost like, and I think he would genuinely spend his time with her, like,
yep,
as his partner. Obviously, we know Roman is a weird cat in terms of relationships and sex especially, but he clearly has an affinity for Jerry. And they've had some sexual experiences together already, and she's willing to play ball there. But it's more than that. Like, he seems comfortable with her, and, like, she believes in him. But genuinely, more than most, and in a realistic way, she levels with Roman. She's not like, you're obviously the choice for CEO. She's honest with him, and that matters too. They have something there. Mm-hmm. It's strange, but it's also hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
What does he say? He's like, you want to get fucking married or something? Or I don't know, like fucking move in and murder me and put my body in a, he just says the weirdest shit. Yeah. He's like, put my fucking body in a suitcase and cook me over the oven. I don't fucking know. I'll talk to you later, bro. Think about it.
He was shooting some darts in this episode.
Great lines in this episode.
The one about Rhea standing on Shiv's back
and working her
working
like an elliptical?
Arms like an elliptical machine.
Dude.
He's
got zingers, bro.
Yeah, that made me LOL.
I don't know how you could look at this episode as not one of your favorites of the season.
Look, man, every time we get into the booth and start rehashing the episode,
then you feel better about it.
I feel much better. This was a really good one, though. This one was, it was just a little scattered. Now, here's the other thing that I will cop to. This was also on me, because last week on the Club Cool podcast, which you can listen to wherever you're listening to this one, I bragged about my 3-0 fantasy team.
Yes.
Which
brought you the karma you
which
deserved.
Was not smart.
No, it wasn't.
And so the fantasy gods,
you couldn't help
the
yourself.
Fantasy gods whipped me in two different ways. They came at me from both angles.
Oh wow.
So I was,
you got DP'd by the fantasy
I got DP'd by the fantasy gods. Not only was I going to be the lowest score of the week if I lost this game, but I also had a chance to win it until the very last second of Monday night's game.
Ooh.
Steelers, Bengals.
Which was unwatchable
and so,
shit.
So this is when I was trying to watch Succession. So I had the game on my phone hoping that James Conner would get 10 more yards, which he didn't.
Yeah, didn't
and
he get
so,
hurt too?
Nah, he'll be okay. But yeah, so for like the first 20 minutes of the episode, I was kind of, you know, watching my fantasy game go down the tubes.
Okay,
and so
then you were in a bad place.
So then I was like I didn't have subtitles on, which I should have if I was going to try to go two screens like that. So it's probably my own damn fault.
Well, as a guy who's 0-4, kiss my ass. Kiss my ass, kiss his ass, kiss our ass. And that was the session talk for this week. Today's episode of OCC is also brought to you by Quip, makers of the greatest toothbrush in the history of oral hygiene. This thing is crazy good. It's going to blow your mind. I'm not kidding. The first time you brush with a Quip, you use their built-in two-minute timer that buzzes every 30 seconds to ensure you achieve a full and even clean, and you're going to finish that brush sesh, and your brain is going to be mush because your mouth is going to feel so clean, like you just left a very, very good, gentle, and loving dentist. I've been on Quip for like 2 years now, maybe a little bit longer, and this is too legit to quit. Fantastic sponsor and supporter of the Clam Fam. Make sure to use the code at the end of this read. Quip automatically delivers brush heads. what is it, every 3 months for clean new bristles, right on schedule. The sleek, intuitive design is simple to use and comes with a travel cap that doubles as a mirror mount. These thoughtful features make brushing something you actually want to do twice every day. It really is an incredible part of my routine now. Every morning and night, and sometimes in the afternoon, depending on where I'm at, I hit my Quip, and it makes me, my entire mouth is cleaner, fresher. It's a great toothbrush. It really is. It's the best I've ever used. Quip starts at just $25, and you'll get your first refill free at getquip.com/dragon. This is a simple way to support our show and start brushing better, but you have to get getquip.com/dragon to get your first refill free. Get right now. Go right now to getquip.com/dragon. Now let's talk about, Barrett, we're doing a new thing. Last week we started a new tradition.
Yeah.
Of discussing the top five movies of our favorite actors and actresses that they've put out over the course of their careers. We did Denzel Washington last week for funsies. This week we're doing Matt Damon.
Okay, I'm glad that you did that, because if you had just said Matt Damon, then I was gonna go, Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. Everyone knows Matt Damon is one of the premier actors in Hollywood, but until you go down his resume, I think since it's been a while since he had like a classic movie, you don't realize like he has knocked out an insane amount of bangers in his day.
It's pretty stunning. This is my favorite part about doing these, you know, little dives into specific actors.
Yeah,
is that you forget like where these guys came from, and it goes both ways too. Sometimes you'll pick a famous actor and you'll start going down their IMDb and you're like, oh man. Two movies made this guy like top of the A-list.
Yeah, and then crazy.
And then other times you get to Matt Damon and you know, he's just been churning since the mid 90s. He's really put in the work.
So I'm going to give you like 8 or 7 or 8 or 10 of my faves of his movies.
Yeah, go
okay?
down the list of just like basic. This is like for your consideration.
For sure, for sure. This is our list we're picking from here. Good Will Hunting. One of my favorite movies, a great movie. I believe it won Best Picture that year. Everybody in that movie blew up as a result. It was the thing that brought Matt Damon and
I don't think it won Best Picture, but he and Ben Affleck won for their Oscar for writing.
For writing it, for the screenplay, right?
Yeah.
Him and Ben Affleck blew up as a result of that. It made them in Hollywood. It's sort of like that. Their speech was super famous pre-social media. Their speech was famous. That's fucking hard to do. Mm-hmm. It was just everything was up from there. Because first of all, I still can't believe if you go watch that movie starring Robin Williams too, the late great Robin Williams, the fact that those two doofuses wrote it, because that was what kind of made them famous. They seemed like doofuses.
They were just a couple of Boston boys.
Hey, we thought, fuck it, we'll write this script, huh? You like apples? Like, and then it was like the best movie of the fucking year. But did not win Best Picture. The Departed, obvious Matt Damon choice, right? Come on. You know one that kind of like, I was like, does this even count? Does Saving Private Ryan count?
Yeah.
Okay. He's just not in it like for the first like 2 hours.
Right. But he is Private Ryan, isn't he?
Yeah. I feel like if your character's name is in the title of the movie, then it's a hall pass for like how much you're in it.
Yeah.
Here's one of mine that I think a lot of people don't consider. The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I disagree. I think that this would be on everybody's top five.
Do you, really?
Yeah.
I think it's like only yuppie white people like Will DeFreeze.
I mean, it happened because it happened like relatively early in his career, but I think it is
young Matt Damon.
Yeah, but I think for sure this is it has a place on this list. Absolutely.
I agree, absolutely. But I for whatever reason, like I don't know if most people consider Matt Damon and then are like Talented Mr. Ripley. It's just sort of a strange film. It's a very weird movie.
I'll say this: if you go to his IMDb page, you know it does the thing now, like what they're known for. It's one of the four things that he's listed here for.
What are the other three?
You know what? But this is already rendered useless, though, and has
one
lost
of them
all.
Let's Buy a Zoo.
Lost all credibility. No, but one of them is not. Any of the Bourne movies, so it's...
Ooh, that's very questionable.
Yeah, that's...
What is Green Zone up there?
It's Good Will Hunting, The Departed, Talented Mr. Ripley, and The Martian, which I believe is also on your list.
It is on my list to be considered, yes. The Martian, which he was nominated for as well, and is a good movie. It's a good movie. I'll say this. I haven't thought about it a single fucking day since I watched it, and I'll never go back and watch it again.
As far as Matt Damon's space movies go, give me his brief scene in Interstellar over The Martian.
Fair enough.
I was honestly, I read the book The Martian, and I thought it was, like, pretty good. It's a fun read. And then they made a movie, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, yeah, nice.
That was it.
And that was it. I was really kind of shocked. I was surprised at the Oscar buzz and his nomination.
I was, too.
And like, I
didn't think it was all as good as it was then.
They love to throw you a bone if you do something like act in a movie pretty much by yourself for like 90 straight minutes.
And then it was like also like saving Mars, like growing plants, like
yeah.
It was there was environmental shit there too. It was political. I don't know if it was or not. Ocean's 11, obviously. Rounders. The poker movie, one of my personal faves. You'll notice in a lot of these movies, Matt Damon, he's very good at surrounding himself with an ensemble cast. Think about this shit. The Departed, Good Will Hunting, Saving Private Ryan, Talented Mr. Ripley, Ocean's 11, Rounders, all of those have multiple A-listers with him. And then you hit The Martian, where he's almost solo the entire time, and the Bourne movies, where he's obviously the main star, and yes, there are supporting characters, but the Bourne movies... Matt Damon made those movies.
Yeah.
And 1 through 3 are all dope as shit. I'm putting firmly in my top 5. Number 1. I'll just say that's the one that gets the credit for me as being launching the Bourne series into my life. I love all the movies sort of equally in terms of the first 3.
Yeah.
Right? It got weird there. The Jeremy Renner one was tight, but I was like, what the fuck? Who?
Yeah, and then the
last one was trash.
Not very
they
good.
They fucked that up. They should not have gone back to the well.
No.
But as a whole, the Bourne series, incredible.
Very, very good, yes.
And then, of course, yes, the Interstellar cameo, Barrett. One of the more... No one knew that was
coming.
No one
knew. No one knew.
Oh, shit, it's Matt fucking Damon. Matt Damon. And then everybody in the theater did that at the same time. And then I'll throw another cameo out there. Euro Trip.
Yep.
Scotty doesn't know.
Scotty doesn't know.
Matt Damon with the comedic musical performance of the early 90s. Was it the early 90s? No.
Yeah.
Late 90s, maybe?
So I love when Matt Damon goes off script.
He's built
the image of like a very, very, you know, he's like a, you know. He's just very clean cut. He's kind of a Boy Scout a little bit. Feels like that in Hollywood.
Generic white guy, clean cut actor. Yeah.
So when he does something like the Eurotrip cameo and just like goes completely off character and does like this grungy, weird pervert dude, like
punk rocker.
That's a lot of fun, and it's even why The Departed is probably my favorite like serious Matt Damon role because he is actually like he's the bad guy. And
right.
That.
Yeah,
and that's
the total scumbag rat flipped cop, dirty cop. Yeah,
yeah. So that's not his usual lane.
Yeah,
and it's fun to see actors do that.
He also just crushed that role. That character was cool and complex, and like the it was like a
very
hateable, but also you felt kind of sorry for the guy. It's like damn, this dude's sad. That movie just so fucking good. So those are my to be considered for me. If you had to pick from that, like as your 5. Do you have a definitive?
So not really. Here's the thing. Although today I consider myself like a pretty serious movie watcher and film buff in general, over high school and college, I didn't really like, I wasn't like watching the quote unquote good movies.
Right. You were watching more Fast and the Furious.
Yes, exactly. So for a lot of these actors, when we do this, they're going to be big gaps in my resume. For example, I've never seen Good Will Hunting all the way through. I've only seen like 20 minutes here and there when it's on TV.
Okay.
And then I've never seen The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You've got to go watch both of those.
Yeah. So, you know, on this list, I really, really enjoyed The Departed. And obviously, I'm a big Bourne fan. It also, just history of film, the Bourne movies are what gave us the Daniel Craig Bond movies.
Oh, yes. That's
so
very important to point
out. If you liked Casino Royale with Daniel Craig and Skyfall with Daniel Craig, which of course you did, because those are great movies, like we owe those to the Bourne franchise.
Will you explain quickly why?
Yeah, because the Pierce Brosnan, James Bond movies had become parodies of themselves. They were laughingstocks of real film.
Just
they were
gadget-filled,
horny as shit,
disasters.
Gadget-filled, just the cheesy acting.
Yeah, they saw Bourne and they were like, okay, this is the rough, gruff, raw version of what we want. The hand-to-hand combat,
exactly,
the fucking using random objects in the room as weapons, like the tight,
the close-up cameras,
tight quarters, hand-to-hand combat shit. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's when they were like, that's the angle.
Bourne was just a huge smash.
And they and just were like, we'll just go with that.
Yeah.
And then it worked so well in Casino Royale that they literally just have kept it for the entire run of Daniel Craig as James Bond.
So those are all really enjoyable. I also love all of his cameos. And so instead of giving a top five, I did just want to point out a few incredible runs in his career.
Okay.
So the first one starts in 1997 with Good Will Hunting. 98 had Saving Private Ryan and Rounders. 99, Dogma and the Talented Mr. Ripley. Dogma, directed by Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
He's a big part of that gang as well,
yes,
the Kevin Smith
is.
Gang.
He's in good circles.
Prior to Good Will Hunting, Chasing Amy in 97, another Kevin Smith movie. 2000, The Legend of Bagger Vance. And then in 2001, Ocean's 11 and one of my favorite funny Matt Damon cameos, another Kevin Smith movie, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah.
When he and Ben Affleck are in the bar, basically acting like they're Good Will Hunting characters.
Yes.
And being complete, like, Boston douchebag tool bags.
Yes.
And that's an awesome one. So we'll fast forward a few years. I mean, not really.
That was a hell of a run, that one.
Then he picks up in 2002 with The Bourne Identity.
And this is when he hit, like, crazy stride.
Yeah. And then he does his... Okay, so actually maybe Bourne Identity should end that first one, because then it's 2004 when he does his Eurotrip cameo, as well as the Bourne Supremacy, and then there are so many things on Matt Damon's IMDb. This is crazy.
Matt Damon.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back in 2001, as well as Ocean's 11. Did I say that?
No. Okay. Now you have.
Which is another one of my, like, that is up there for sure.
Ocean's 11.
And it's like, I'm going to put that in the top five for Clooney and Brad Pitt as well.
I'm going to put that in the top three of movies that are on TV
and
that it, will get me to stop
and
watch.
It's just like, that is just one of my all-time favorite movies.
And it's on,
as far as
it's
like,
on TV always.
Yeah. So, yeah, man. It's been a nice little run for this actor here.
Man, here's my definitive top five. Number one, The Departed. Number two, Bourne. Whichever. Bourne. Number three, Good Will Hunting. Number four, Talented Mr. Ripley. Number five, Rounders. That's
it. Yeah. Rounders, also fantastic. God, I mean, if that really makes you want to play poker and also not want to play poker.
At the same exact time.
Same exact time.
Yes. And this actually brings us to our next segment, because Ford versus Ferrari that Matt Damon is starring in might end up on this list one day.
It
our
could.
Next segment
Absolutely.
Is we're going to talk a little bit about trailer hype.
Yes.
Some of these upcoming movies we've got. Christian Bale and Matt Damon's Ford versus Ferrari being one of those movies that I'm stoked for. And
Absolutely.
Mostly because we've seen a couple different really badass racing movies pulled off over the past, 8 years-ish? And this looks like it's going to be another one.
Yeah.
I'm not a racing guy. I don't really give a shit about F1 or NASCAR or any of that stuff, but it tends to make for a good movie.
It does. It does. I'm very much looking forward to this. I mean, give me Christian Bale, another just all-time fave.
Yep. We'll do him at some point for sure, top five-wise.
Yeah. So this has all the makings of a hit.
If you haven't seen the trailer yet, it looks very tight.
Russ, I don't want to pull the curtain back too much, but is there an off chance we're actually able to see a pre-screening of this?
I don't know.
It's possible. It's possible.
At what?
The Austin Film Festival.
Oh, shit. Are they pre-screening
it's one of the marquee screenings.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Barrett and I are apparently, allegedly, we'll see.
We might get some cred, credentials.
How cool would it be if we got access to something? We've never been given access.
It would be our first, like, real, like...
Hashtag access.
Hashtag access, yeah.
Nobody's ever given us access.
Nobody's ever given us access.
Fucking strange, though, really. When you start to think about it, it's like, where's the access?
Yeah, thing? Yeah.
Here it is. It's coming. We all are. The next movie, Uncut Gems.
Yeah, did you watch this trailer?
Yeah.
Can I just give Adam Sandler all the Oscars right now?
Do you really think you're that far bought in?
I'm hopeful. I really, really, really want this to be like, oh my God, Adam Sandler.
Okay.
Just because I don't, You know, all the hate, all the Sandler hate makes me mad.
It should.
Because all you people out there, if Netflix was like, hey, we don't really care what you do, but we want you to make 8 movies and we're going to give you $25 million for every single one that you make. And we're not really that particular about
what
content or how long they are or how good they are or anything. Like, you would just get your friends together and make dumb shit. That's what you would do.
But you also, like, dude, I don't even like that angle of the argument anymore because he's not failing. Like, they broke records with that movie. That stupid Jennifer Aniston movie broke all the Netflix records for streaming its opening weekend. So, like, people are watching the Adam Sandler shit that he's putting out. Now, the thing is, we've all hoped and wanted, big Adam Sandler, people who grew up on him, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, et cetera, down the line. We've all wanted to see him make some sort of, like, statement, resurgence, or, I mean, I don't even know if I've hoped for a full-blown comeback, but, like, a statement.
Yeah.
Like, look, fuckers, I'm super talented and awesome, because people have hated so hard on, like, and he went in such a weird direction with so many of his later movies.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give Funny People as one that really rubbed me the wrong way, because it seemed like two different movies mashed into 3 hours.
Yeah.
First hour and a half about stand-up comedy, second hour and a half about divorce.
Here's the other thing. The other, like, serious Sandler movies were very, very under the radar.
But some, like, of them were allegedly very good.
Yes.
I haven't seen any of them.
Like Punch Drunk Love, which is Anderson movie.
It's one that always gets brought up as a very good performance.
And then, what is it? The most recent one was, like, the Meyerowitz Chronicles or something like
that.
But these other ones where he is supposedly given very good performances were, like, very, very kind of under the radar, low budget, or, like, borderline indie flicks.
Right.
And this, like, took over the internet when the trailer dropped last week.
Uncut Gems.
Yeah. And it had so many memeable screenshots. So it was all over Instagram. And, like, people just really ran with this whole. And it also looks crazy, right?
Yeah.
He's selling Gremlin chains iced out in diamonds to fucking Kevin Garnett in The Weeknd.
Kevin Garnett's there.
So, you know, it's got a lot of really cool things going for it. Question, have you seen the first Safdie Brothers movie, Good Time?
Mm-mm.
Okay, this is probably one that that you and I should watch at some point. I don't know if we need to cover it on the podcast, but it is like, it's like this really raw, frenetic, energetic, kind of dark, gritty movie starring Robert Pattinson about, like, these two brothers in New York that, like, get into some shit and have to, like, get their way out.
That sounds badass.
Yeah, so Good Time, we should put it on our
list. I'm sold.
That's who's doing this movie. So it's just got a lot of positive buzz, and I would just like for my boy Adam to, like, you know, put one on the scoreboard for everybody.
You know what it is for me? It's almost too good to be true. That's why I don't trust it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This trailer, this whole thing is too good to be true. I'm struggling to acknowledge that we live in a world where that's possible.
Yeah.
But I want to believe. I'm like Mulder. I want to believe.
Here's the thing. Jennifer Lopez is getting serious Oscar buzz. For a movie that I thought was going to be absolute just utter trash.
That's South Park, not racism. What's up?
Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, yeah, Taylor. For Hustlers?
For Hustlers.
You think it's trash?
No. When I saw that trailer, I was like, oh, well, that movie's going to get 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. That looks horrible.
Yeah.
And it is, like, it's apparently fantastic, and J-Lo's getting Oscar buzz for it.
I think it only looks horrible because every attempt at a movie like that before in the past has fallen flat on its face and been a total disaster.
Yeah, that's typically why things look bad is because
their predecessors made them.
Yeah, because the historical predecessors were train wrecks.
I'm saying if you looked at it in a vacuum, the trailer is decent. Yeah. And it was like, I was like, okay, this is an interesting ensemble. I'll say that the Jennifer Lopez casting was the number one thing that I was like, well, this is going to be trash because most of her movies are sort of shitty.
Yeah. So, I mean, you never know. Let's get a Sandler, you know, good one up there.
Excited for that. Birds of Prey was the other one that I watched today with Margot Robbie in it. And, like, listen, I don't really give a shit about this movie. And the trailer didn't help.
Now, here's one where I would like for this to be a success because, you know, that one time that I met Margot Robbie in the airport and now we're like besties.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, I'm rooting for her.
Okay, did you go see the fucking Suicide Squad in theaters?
So, this past weekend, I was doing some painting and it was on TV and so I popped it on.
So you didn't see it in theaters?
I did not see it in theaters.
Okay, I did, so I'll never forgive her.
This movie, well, first of all, Suicide Squad. What the hell happened?
That was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in theaters. Joker was an utter and total
disaster.
Why
did that movie cost like $300 million? It looked like it was shot like on one green screen.
I think most of the money was the CGI for the witch character that Cara Delevingne played that didn't even work out on screen. Like, when that's all unfolding, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful.
It's truly
terrible. The subtitles were in like little funky fonts.
Everything about it. Awful, Barrett. No redeeming qualities whatsoever.
You just wonder in a movie like that, where like, how is there nobody along the way?
Will Smith wasn't like, this is like, fucked up.
Guys, this sucks.
Yeah, we need to cut this. We need to cut the budget down at the very least, or make it shorter or something.
So I agree with you. I saw the Birds of Prey trailer, and it didn't look that good. And then I saw most of Suicide Squad on TV.
And you were like,
and
no.
I was like, oh man, Birds of Prey, it's not looking great.
Okay,
so
what are these other two that you're stoked for?
The other two, Ready or Not, which looks like a very, very, very fun horror movie jaunt. And so go watch that trailer. It kind of has some vibes from that movie that got canned. It's people running around trying to kill each other, basically.
Okay, yeah.
Although this
dude,
one,
I haven't watched this trailer yet.
This one is in a ritualistic setting for a young bride to join a very wealthy family.
Tight.
To do so, she has to like play this game, which
Love
is
it.
Staying alive, essentially. And so it looks really fun and really kind of like crazy and out there.
I'm super in for scary movies. I'm a big horror movie guy.
The other is Knives Out. Now, Knives Out is one where I am hopeful. I'm very hopeful in spite of a trailer that I don't think is very good.
Okay.
Knives Out has like just one of the best casts that's been put together in the last 5 years.
It looks like it has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's Daniel Craig doing a severe Southern accent in a movie that I'm basically just going to describe as R-rated Clue.
Chris Evans is there?
Like, it's a whodunit. In fact, it might even be based on an Agatha Christie novel. I can't remember.
What the shit? This cast is crazy.
But the cast is insane. It's directed by Rian Johnson, who is kind of on the come up. He did the most recent Star Wars movie. Toni Collette, Ana de Armas. It's got Edie Patterson from Righteous Gemstones, Chris Evans, Daniel Craig, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Shape of Water and Boardwalk Empire, Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta, Christopher Plummer, Don Johnson.
Jesus.
Shouts to Miami Vice.
How was the budget only $40 million?
All these people together in this little like whodunit caper flick. The trailer, when somebody like pitched me this movie, basically, you know, I read about it or something.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, this sounds good. And then I was discouraged by the trailer, but now reviews are coming in from festivals and it's apparently fantastic. So,
okay, good. So saved.
Yeah.
Good.
But Knives Out and Ready or Not, also trailers to go
nice.
Check out and get hyped for.
I got to watch those two as well.
Yeah.
This episode of OCC is also brought to you by Manscaped, a fantastic company who's finally providing men with the tools we need to properly maintain our downstairs mix-up. So if you're still using a terrible and incorrect tool with which to trim or groom your pubic region, you're a buffoon. But don't feel bad. This is a common issue for dudes. Most guys straight up don't know what product to use to clean themselves up. So stop retiring your old electric facial hair razors and using that as a body hair tool and getting nicks and cuts and snags. Don't do that ever again. Get the incredible Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped, where their entire product line was created specifically for a man's distinctive grooming needs below the waist. Featuring specially formulated products to cleanse, moisturize, and deodorize, Manscaped also offers tools engineered to give every gentleman a close, refined appearance, empowering men by providing the right tools for the right job. Their complete manscaping system includes that glorious Lawnmower 2.0 that I spoke to, a rechargeable waterproof trimmer with skin-safe technology for a nick-free trim. To learn more about Manscaped's revolutionary products, visit manscaped.com, manscaped.com, promo code OCC for 20% off your entire order. Manscaped.com, code OCC for 20% off. Your balls will thank you. Next segment. Okay, so quickly, I wanted to talk about a big step that we could be taking here in the OCC realm and really just in the Bolin Media realm as a whole. I've got a new setup at my crib.
Now, I've seen some of this on social media.
It is a gaming PC that I've purchased.
Now, I know nothing about this.
Yes.
So, did you have to take out a second mortgage to afford this clear boxed gaming PC?
That is yet to be seen. It is currently on the company credit card.
Okay.
So we'll see if I can get that paid off.
Oh, okay. No, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But no, not terribly.
It's a write-off, Jerry.
It is a write-off. I'll say it was like it was under $2,000.
Okay, okay. Okay. I didn't know. Yeah.
So,
there's some Macs out there that cost like $5,000. So
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with some fancy.
It's reasonable computer prices.
Do you remember like in high school when we wanted like Alien Workshop computers?
Alienware. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So I had to delve back into this whole world, right? Like I haven't played on a PC since 2008 or whatever. Like back when we were in high school, I used to play Counter-Strike all the time.
Okay.
But as a result of the way streaming works and competitive gaming and me sort of like fucking around in that space and then also wanting to do more content with live streaming and video,
mm-hmm.
I went and got this set up. And the cool thing about it is this. First of all, my Twitch channel is twitch.com/BossRoland. It's Ross Boland with the B and the R reversed. But the cool thing about it is this. If you don't give a shit about video games, first of all, it's not just video games. It's also almost like a live podcast in a way. It's
okay.
Just interacting with the chat, answering questions, talking about whatever you want.
That's on Twitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can talk with the people you're playing with. I bring in like random podcast listeners and talk to them. But there is a lot more you can do with Twitch than just video games. And the thing that is interesting to me is like you and I potentially doing live reaction after the Succession finale, right?
Yeah,
so you and me can be sitting down on a couch and for 20 minutes or whatever, give our live reaction on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for all the dudes, fucking badasses that are supporting us on this podcast.
I like the sound of that.
And that would be very, very fun. Now, there's a lot of other stuff we can do too. The point is, this is like the next wave I'm excited about. Obviously, the podcast is always going to be the forefront focus of our offering here at OCC, but it's just another place we can bring y'all cool shit and do cool things. If you have any ideas for, or there are any other shows that do anything that y'all enjoy on Twitch, holler at me. I would like to hear what other people are doing and see what works for Barrett and I, what's best for Barrett and I and OCC and the Clam Fam, getting into some video, because as I mentioned, the production company I use to put this show together, Permanent Record, and I are wading into the video waters together next week. With my other podcast, the Ross Boland podcast, we're going to be experimenting with some video and seeing how it goes. And from there, Barrett and I are obviously going to dive in too with OCC and bringing you guys a whole new front of content with video is a very, very exciting concept to me. Having live podcasts online, video-wise, very exciting concept to me. Stoked for all that. So for the time being, what I need you to do is go to twitch.com/BossRoland. Give me a follow, hit me with a subscribe. I know a lot of y'all on the Clam Fam are probably a little bit more familiar with gaming in this whole world than, like, I'd say the general populace as a result of already being closeted nerds. So go to twitch.com/BossRoland. A lot of you are out of the closet like me, but some of you are closeted nerds. Go to twitch.com/BossRoland. Follow me, subscribe. If you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime subscription per month. Use that shit on me. And we'll be announcing the ways we decide to use Twitch moving forward, but I'm stoked for it. Today's episode of OCC is also brought to you by Honey. You ever buy something online and then find out you could have gotten it for less?
Hate that.
It's worse than rolling down your window to give a homeless person some money only to realize you don't have any cash. Not to mention, once that happens, you feel like you could be overpaying every time you shop. Like, luckily, I have Honey, the free browser extension that saves you time and money when you're shopping online. Honey scans the internet for coupon codes and other discounts. Then, like magic, it automatically applies the one with the biggest savings to your cart at checkout. You don't even have to do anything extra. It just knows about every coupon code, every sale, every discount at over 20,000 sites like Amazon, Macy's, J.Crew, Domino's, Sephora, Target, and more. So you just shop like normal once you've got the Honey extension, and it finds you savings. And believe me, it feels amazing, like finding a $20 bill in the pocket of a fresh pair of washed blue jeans. Amazing. Like that. I did a full grocery store run on Target.com, and literally as I'm putting the items into the cart, Honey is checking the internet for all the latest coupon codes, finding the one that works the best, and boom, I saved $27. Instant savings, made my freaking day. Honey has found its 10 million users, over $1 billion in savings. That's really all you need to know. Come on. Listen, there's no real reason not to use Honey. It's free to use, and it installs on your computer in just two clicks. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/dragon. That's joinhoney.com /dragon. And that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors again for supporting the show. Make sure you support them to support us. If for some reason you don't need the greatest products known to man, which are brought to you by the sponsors of this show, which would make you a fool, you can directly support us by going to patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, where, as we mentioned, in October, all kinds of exciting content coming. We've got The Joker as our movie club movie of the month. We've got The Righteous Gemstones season 1 wrap-up. We've got Fleabag season 2 in full. We're going to discuss as an episode. We've got the Hotline Call Extravaganza for the Mollusk Militia exclusively, using the Mollusk Militia hotline exclusively. It's going to be an exciting month on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, isn't it, Barrett?
Oh, very, very much so.
Yes, follow us on social media.
It's going to be righteous.
Is it?
Yeah.
Lucifer.
And then hopefully we don't get any fleas.
Lucifer.
And we'll also probably joke a lot because we're a bunch of jokers.
Good God, man. Instagram @oystersclamscockles. Twitter @clamsandcockles. Facebook.com/oystersclamscockles. I'm Ross Bolin, and you can follow me @WRBOLEN, @WRBolin on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. Is that it? Yeah, I think so. And you can listen to my other show, The Ross Bolin Podcast, a humor, comedy, mental health, addiction, substance abuse, pirates, animals, sports, current events podcast that's available all the same places as Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the Ross Bolin Podcast. Barrett, where can we follow you on social media and hear more of your beautiful voice?
Yeah, follow me @BarrettDudley, Instagram, and Twitter. And then check out the Club Cool Pod, where we meet at the intersection of style and pop culture. You can follow it on Instagram @ClubCoolPod. And listen to it right here, wherever you're listening to OCC.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. It's the O to the C.
What an episode this was.
And the CP.
Just a really fun time.
Just a fun time. Are you doing any ACL this weekend?
I am. I'm going. Yeah. I'm going the whole weekend. I'll be out there the whole weekend. If you see me, holler at me.
That's it, yeah.
Not you, Barrett. I know. I'll see you.
Right. I believe we're
going to a lunch of some kind together.
That'd be great. Yeah, so that's what you can expect from our social mediums this weekend, I would expect, is just...
A lot of ACL.
Yeah, but here's what I won't do.
I'm going to be smoking doinks out there.
Okay, but I'm going to not do only one IG story per show.
Good for you.
I'm not going to rain down on you like the entire Childish Gambino set.
I won't be doing stage footage. I'll be doing mostly like the weird shit and the people watching.
Yeah,
footage.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going to try to do. Yeah. That's what I'm going to try to do.
I feel you though. I know it gets tempting to.
It is. It's so tempting
to do frames of a concert. That's why, like on RBP for example, we always say you
just one. Yeah,
just
I love
one
that.
To
it's
let
one,
them know.
It's one of my favorite bits
that we do. Yeah, yeah like yeah. It really is tempting, even at a stupid, like a sporting event.
Well, because you want to I get it. You got to tell people where you're at,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Hey, I'm at this tight thing.
But once you've accomplished it, you stop. But for some reason, we can't stop ourselves. It snowballs and becomes like...
It's terrible.
Next thing
you know,
the whole Childish Gambino album is on there, and then nobody can hear it.
Yeah.
And nobody cares except you,
yeah.
And you're there.
Yeah.
So why are you... It's sad. Wanted to let him know.
There you go.
Yeah, but I am psyched for ACL. If you see Barrett or I out at Austin City Limits in Austin, Texas this weekend, say hi.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you, Clam Fam, always. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll be back next week. Adios, muchachos.